Welcome to the first episode of the seventh season of the Ubuntu podcast. It's Wednesday, the 2nd of April, and we're going to discuss what's been happening in the news and in the Ubuntu community. If you're listening live, you can send us messages using the chat facility on that there website that we have, and also in the IRC channel. I'm Tony, and joining me this week are the regular team.
Yay!
The Fab Foursome.
Yay!
In no particular order, it's Mark.
I think that is a particular order.
It's reverse order. It's Mark.
Oh, not the order I was hoping for. Hello, everybody.
Hello, Mark. Suddenly much louder than you were earlier.
I'm sorry.
And Laura's here.
Hiya.
And Alan's here.
Hello.
Alan's here.
Well, we hope you've missed us. It's been a long winter.
It doesn't matter if they have or haven't. They're getting more of it.
Yes, this ball is rolling. It can't be stopped now. Yeah, a long old winter. We'll catch up a bit in the next episode and find out what we've been up to.
All right, then.
Wait till next week, then.
Everybody's here. We're all awake. We've all had quite a bit of cake and
yes,
quite a bit of tea.
And, tea.
Oh, yes.
And we're going to get on with it, shall we?
Yes. Yep.
Why not?
Let's listen to some news.
I think we should talk about some news. Well, firstly, DRM-free gaming outfit GOG.com are bringing at least 100 games to Linux this year. They haven't released anything yet, but will support Mint and, of course, Ubuntu, saying these two distros will get the full GOG.com treatment.
What does that mean?
Well, I assume it means that they will be fully supported on those platforms, available to download DRM-free from the website. And there's some other stuff they have, like a download manager, because some of the games are quite big, so I think it lets you download, manage which ones are downloading. And
so for those who don't know, this is like Steam kind of thing.
What's GOG stand for?
Well, it originally stood for Good Old Games, because it was focused on taking classic games from like DOS and early Windows and getting them to run on modern systems. But now they do that, and they also do indie games. So the kind of stuff you see in the Humble Indie Bundle. And it's all DRM-free, whereas on Steam, it's all
wrapped up in
Steam. You can actually get a lot of the indie games which are on Steam, you can get DRM-free through GOG.com.
So you just go to get GOG, you sign in, and it's got like a storefront, and you buy games, and then you press a button and download a thing, and you install it, and then you don't have to have a wrapper or a store app like iTunes or Steam on your machine.
Exactly.
You can just go to the website, download it, and install it as many times on as many machines as you like.
Yes, and you can you log into your account and your library of games stays there for you to download too. For example, I bought Fallout on there a while ago, which runs under Wine. They don't sell Fallout anymore, but I can still go and download a DRM-free installer of Fallout.
And do they ship it with Wine, or do you just happen to know?
I just happen to know that it works. Play on Linux is an easy instally software on Wine utility.
Is that what they call it?
I can't.
Easy instally.
It's like a load of scripts for installing stuff through
that
Wine.
That sounds more like it.
And they have on their list a load of the games that they support are based on the GOG.com installers. And they've also got a load, like the DOS games, a lot of them use DOSBox. So you can download their version, install it, and then put in the Linux version of DOSBox instead of the Windows version of DOSBox.
So this is essentially like going to the Pirate Bay and downloading Abandonware, basically running it in Wine.
But legally.
But paying and legally and making sure the people who wrote it get the money.
Yeah.
Can I just add, I was going to say all that, but Mark beat me
to it. Of course. We were going to have you, but you were busy with twiddling buttons and things.
Yeah, I do that.
Sorry, more from Tony's gaming news segment, which I know you've all been missing, the insights from the Games Master.
One of the reasons why we've been off air for so long is because Tony's been sat there gaming all the time. And
How are you doing with Defense of the Ancients 2?
It's going very well. I've defended several Ancients.
Oh, that's good.
And they're both very grateful.
Super. Moving on. After checking carefully that this wasn't an April Fool's, it seems Microsoft are going to release the source code from MS-DOS and Microsoft Word. But before you get too excited, the source code dates from the early 1980s and is not being released
or under 1908, as it says in there.
Does it? Oh, I can't see because the text is so small. I figured it was 80s. And not being released under a FLOSS license. What is the point of that?
It's for archival and research purposes or something.
For people who want to research how MS-DOS works.
So yeah.
Does Microsoft Word now have a completely different code base from
what
it had?
I imagine so, yes.
Okay. I'd imagine there's very little similarity between now and it's that
I
long
hope
ago.
There's very little similarity.
That bit where you press A on your keyboard and A appears on the screen, that might still be the same
code.
Well,
I doubt it, because originally it was for like DOS and now it's for Windows.
Oh, is this the DOS
this
version?
This is the DOS version, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's Word 1.0.1 or something.
Right, okay.
So, but people getting nostalgic about that.
Well, yeah, I mean, I can see some value in, you know, and some interest in seeing how they coded this in the same way that I'm personally interested in how Ant Attack was written. You know, it's not going to give me any benefit. I'm not going to be able to write better software knowing how Ant Attack on the Z80 CPU on the Spectrum was written like 30 years ago. And I don't think I'm going to get much value. I mean, it's interest more than anything.
Mm.
But yeah. Even then, there's been some people saying you shouldn't look at it because it will taint you.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, in the same way that these leaked copies of Windows that came out on, you know, Pirate Bay or whatever, people have said you shouldn't look at that because it's encumbered by, you know, restrictive licenses, and you may be looking at patent encumbered code, and you shouldn't because it might taint any free software that you make.
Wouldn't the patents have expired by now?
The copyright, you might see the copyrighted code, and then you might remember that when you write something else, and therefore
consciously or subconsciously.
But yes, I mean, I think the thing here to focus on is that it's being donated to the National Museum of Computing, I guess, in America.
Yes, Alan and I have been there, in fact.
Ah, have we?
Yes,
we went. Oh, we did, during UDS
in Mountain View.
Oh, that was awesome, that place.
Big Babbage engine and lots of old IBM hard disks.
So, yeah, it's not being released as you know, hello world, here's some source code. It's being, you know, archived as a historical artifact as much as anything else.
Mm-hmm, excellent. Well, there we go. And speaking of historical artifacts... you can create some using Blender 2.7, which is out now. You can model a jug, an earthenware pot, or an old vase.
Or an entire film, Tony.
Yeah.
An entire film. It has a video editor built in and 3D rendering capability. Blender is awesome.
You could do a simulation of Pompeii or something if you want to be old about it.
A whole film of historical artifacts.
I mean, haven't they started a new film?
Yes, they have.
It's not just one studio, the Blender Foundation. It's multiple studios around the world.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but they're doing it in a really cunning way. You know how you would expect, well, hang on, how are they all different artists rendering, you know, different parts of the film? But the different scenes are stylistically very different. You're following different characters and different parts of the film, and they're done by different studios working collaboratively towards this full feature film rather than the shorts that like Big Bug Bunny and Sintel and the others that they've done in the past. They're using Blender to make this much bigger film.
Do you know what the title is?
I can't remember off the top of my head, but
if you go to blender.org, it's like there's a big banner on the front page about it.
And there's and then when you look at the trailer for it, you can see how it's going to work with all the different studios. It looks very interesting.
Do you think they could do a 3D rendering of the source code for Microsoft Word 1.0.1?
Well, yes, but would anyone watch it?
I would. So the new version supports volume rendering of atmospheric effects, smoke and stuff, presumably, and clouds and mist and fog. Enhancements to improve game development. So it's not just a video editor or a rendering, it's a game platform.
It's actually a game platform as well. There's a few tutorials I've seen. There's a guy called Chris, I can't remember his last name, spelled with a K, and he does Python tutorials and all kinds of other tutorials, and he started writing a game which I think was a kind of homage to Angry Birds, and it was called Peed Off Penguins or something. and he's done a whole tutorial in Blender for how to create a game where you drag the penguins and they fly and stuff.
You can create use it for creating objects for 3D printing as well.
Ooh.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
There's nothing you can't do with it.
No, there isn't.
And a long-awaited change to copyright law in the UK will finally allow owners of those thin plastic things called CDs to legally rip them to MP3, ORG, or whatever format you like. Format shifting will also be permissible for ebook readers. However, you still can't distribute or share your ripped music, not even to people who are in your family in your own home.
Who might be able to listen to the said music if you played it through a stereogram.
Get out of my room. You can't listen to this.
Yeah. You're breaking copyright with your ears.
Format shifting for ebook readers. Does that mean that you're allowed to break the DRM?
That was my question too.
And is the answer no?
I think the answer is probably no, because that would be bypassing the encryption system.
Reverse engineering, yeah.
And you mustn't do that. Computer
even if you're doing it to do something which is now a protected right in law.
Yes, because Great. Computer Misuse Act still says you can't do things they don't want you to do.
And can't you reverse engineer under the UK law, but it's just in the US you can't do that?
Now you're getting beyond the limits of my knowledge. Thin though they are. But it's good news that you can now rip your DVD.
You can not now do what you were doing anyway.
Not that anyone was ever prosecuted for it in the same way that not that anyone will be prosecuted for ripping a CD and putting it on, you know, their kid's MP3 player.
Yeah, but I will walk slightly prouder in the street, Alan, come June, that I am a sinner. Not a sinner in that way anymore.
Okay.
My conscience will be a smidgen clean.
I'll tell you what, I'll rip twice as many CDs and give them to my children just to outweigh the pride that you have.
You heard it here first, yep. Mr. Policeman.
Come and get him before June. Lock him up. Lock his kids up.
Amazon has finally announced the Fire TV, their much anticipated rival to similar offerings from Apple and Google and Ubuntu.
I saw that coming.
The set-top box is said to feature a quad-core CPU and 2 GB of RAM with a separate GPU capable of 1080p, notably not 4K because of all those 4K televisions that everybody has. It's also rumoured to feature gaming capabilities via a gamepad, which is perhaps similar to the Ouya, if it's running Android.
Well, yeah, it seems to be. I mean, I've not seen what games are going to be available for it, but I would assume, given it's going to run some modified version of Android, then yeah, there will be Android style games, and a lot of them are starting to, well, a lot of them support gamepads. And I suspect with this device, then the Amazon store will ship with, you know, games that default to supporting the gamepad, which is, you know, it's good having one box underneath your telly that that, you know, you can watch films, listen to music, and play games on, that, you know,
yeah,
people will have more arguments over what you're going to do with it.
Excellent.
Also, while we've been off the air, the stream of revelations about the NSA, GCHQ and other intelligence agencies has carried on unabated. The latest stories accuse the government agencies of targeting webcam chats, German satellites, German presidents, Hotmail accounts, Angry Birds and probably everything else.
Yeah, I think it's safest to assume now that basically your system is compromised. They are watching what you're doing unless you read otherwise in the papers, basically.
Unless there's an article that says Tony Whitwell was not monitored by the NSA, so we should assume you are being monitored.
Indeed.
Even when you walk down the street.
You mean they could be listening to our conversation right now?
They could.
There'd be people listening to this.
They could be listening to this if they go to podcast.ubuntuuk.org/live.
At 8:30 British Summer Time on every other Wednesday evening.
They've got to be quite dedicated, haven't they?
I think that's the end of the news.
Yeah, there's no way that that could actually happen because that would involve overtime and the government departments don't do that.
True.
But yes, that's the end of the news. And those of you who hated the jingles last year that reminded you how to get in touch will be pleased to hear this.
The Ubuntu podcast needs you. Yes, you. If you hear something that tickles, titillates or taunts you, tweet us at UUPC or email podcast@ubuntu-uk.org. You can also talk to us on the telephone, Skype, Facebook and Google+. Find links to all these places on our website, podcast.ubuntu-uk.org. We really would like to hear from you, so go on, do your duty, keep calm and compose an email.
Now for the section we laughably call community news, which is basically overspill from the news.
Don't give all our secrets away.
There's more stuff about Ubuntu here than there is in the news section.
That's true.
So we can't be accused of being biased in the news section.
We used to call it a bit about Ubuntu, but that was clearly an intuitive and helpful title, so we've canned. We canned that two seasons.
Okay, so news encompasses events as well.
This is true. Of which there are none listed here. No. Anyway, let's start with the community news that Brendan Eich has been appointed CEO of Mozilla. Controversy over his financial support for an anti-gay equality legislation in California.
That's not equality for anti-gays. That's
badly worded, isn't it? So basically, some years ago, he gave financial aid to a bill called Proposition 8, which sought to outlaw equal opportunity marriage for gay people in California.
Yes. Yep.
And years have passed, and he's been CTO of Mozilla, and now he's CEO of Mozilla Corp. Not the foundation. And there's been a bit of a brouhaha from various points asking for his resignation, asking for him to make statements about the inclusiveness in Mozilla, which has been done.
Yes.
And it's kind of not died down. I think some people thought that would die down and it would all be done and dusted, but it's kind of carried on for a few days now.
Yeah, there have been LGBT people who work within Mozilla who've said that they've never had a negative experience directly from him, and you know, he's been a boss within a workplace, you know, who hasn't done anything wrong in their experience. So it's an interesting position, isn't it? Because your political views, which, when he was CTO, weren't particularly surfaced and trumpeted and talked about, but now right. he's CEO. Does that right. mean that Firefox and Mozilla and the other products are going to radically become anti-gay in some way?
And he did pretty much invent JavaScript, and no one's really? Not had anyone suggest that we boycott JavaScript.
Mm. Well, I have heard people say that.
Really?
For completely different reasons.
I've heard
plenty of people have said boycott JavaScript. Come on, Mark.
But not on these grounds.
Yeah, and it's a tricky position, yeah, given yes. none of us are LGBTQ or whatever the various letters are. So we're not in that position, or none of us live in California, so we're not impacted by this legislation. So let's throw some peanuts in from here.
But, yes.
It's tricky because, you know, clearly the guy has beliefs that go against what some of the employees of the company he runs, have. And that's going to be difficult for those people who work for him, for some of them, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I can see why people call for his resignation, because he is the leader of the company. I can see why they would call for his resignation. I don't think it's a good idea to boycott Mozilla projects or products. I think that's misguided. And OkCupid popping up a splash on their website, which suggested that Firefox users should try another browser, including Internet Explorer, it offered, or Chrome, I think was possibly not the best idea, but gave them loads of great publicity nonetheless.
Mm. Yes, it's interesting that for the free software community and sort of the more liberal aspects of society, you know, people who kind of just believe love whoever you want, and as long as you're not hurting anybody, who cares? You know, that sort of liberal attitude and free software seem to go hand in hand quite often, and it's the meritocracy thing, I guess.
Well, I think the problem is not that he believes something, but the fact that he put cold card cash to oppose something.
Yes.
Yeah,
and that's a bit of a difference.
I certainly don't agree with his opinions, but I can see that there might be circumstances in which political opinions of somebody outside the workplace, it's a difficult point when they cross into the workplace.
Yeah, I guess.
But I don't know.
It would have been a clearer thing if it'd been putting money into a racial segregation thing. You could kind of, it wouldn't be any different in some ways, but people would feel that there was more of a right and wrong about it because it's more established.
Yeah.
That's
a really good point, actually, Laura. I hadn't thought of it in that terms. Yeah, that would be an obviously wrong thing to do, wouldn't it?
But
yeah, but that's already covered by legislation, really.
Yeah.
Whereas
yeah.
this was a point at which there was legislation being enacted or trying to be enacted.
It was a debate. Yeah, it was a debate about legislation. That was the point. So, you know, if there was somebody who was supporting racial segregation legislation, you could call them in their judgment into question. Very tricky. Well, hopefully things will be resolved one way or the other before too long. Yeah.
So, on a lighter note, 1404 LTS is almost upon us.
Yeah, 2 weeks.
What date is it? Thursday?
17th of April.
Cool. I'm looking forward to that because I'm still on 1204.
Yeah, so was I till recently. Oh, no, didn't say anyone.
It's going to be interesting to see, for instance, Steam is currently supported on 1204. It's going to be interesting to see...
That's fine on my 1404
system.
Well,
yeah, no, but I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how... whether support for things like that,
how quickly it moves on.
So yeah, whether they say, "Oh, we're going to stay on 1204 until it end of life's," and then see what happens, or whether they say, "Right, we're going to move and say 1404 is what we recommend."
Well, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what Steam will explicitly do. I know there was a big push that they said, you know, we support Ubuntu and, you know, go for this version. I'm not sure whether they will, you know, carry on with that after 14.04 comes out or not. That's an interesting point. But, you know, the software carries on working.
Yeah. No,
you know, how long is it supported for?
5 years. Okay. So there's been a lot of mire about Mir and Wayland in the news over the last like year now. Feels like longer.
Still can't remember what they are.
But the cool thing is 14.04 will not ship with Mir or Wayland, but ships with X. Yeah. So for the next 5 years, you know, if you want to carry on running a desktop that is traditional X-based, then Ubuntu 14.04 is there.
And 12.04 is still going to be supported for 3 years more.
My simple maths means yes, I agree with you. Yes. Cool.
So some cool things which are in 14.04 on the desktop, because I've also installed it on my work laptop, a new lock screen which looks like LightDM. Is it LightDM?
Yes.
Right. So it's exactly the same password entry box which you get when you log in. Yeah. And it fades nicely in and out with the desktop. It's all very nice.
Yeah, that's quite cute.
In window menus. So you can now...
locally integrated menus,
yes. Not universal, yes. Mac style one.
Both.
So you can decide whether when the window's maximized, it'll always be at the top. When the window's not maximized, you can choose globally. You can't choose it each time whether they should be in the title bar of the window when you mouse over, or whether they should always be at the top.
And it's by default, it's at the top, isn't
yes.
it?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Global menu by default, but you can have them inside the window if you want to.
Yeah.
I have them inside the window, but I generally have everything maximized,
so
they end up being at the top of the screen anyway. But the nice thing is having that unbreaks sloppy focus. Focus follows mouse.
Yeah.
Because that broke.
Yes. When you're trying menu. To go and.
Yeah.
Yes.
With global menu, yeah. Having the menu up there, if you traverse across another window, the menu would change on the way to the top of the screen. And now, because the menu can be inside the window you're currently in, I've re-turned on sloppy focus using Unity Tweak Tool, I think, which is in the repository, which is brilliant. Now I'm super happy and I'm way more productive than I have been for the last 3 years.
Good. Folks, follow mouse is the way to go.
Yes.
So you're getting more web apps now.
Oh, yeah.
And there's also UI scaling options in the appearance settings as well, which lets you say how big, like, the launcher and the... what's the name of the bar across the top, Alan?
The menu bar.
The menu bar should be. Yes. So, for instance, if you've got a high-resolution screen... you can now adjust it so that it takes up more pixels.
Yeah,
that was a flaw. Because we never really caught up with OS X on the high DPI screens. Yeah. As soon as they came out, Unity looked kind of lost in a tiny little slither down the side of the screen. So, yeah, that's landed a little while ago, and that's much nicer.
It says no more keyboard options.
Oh, yeah. Well, it used to be that you could go into your keyboard layout settings, and there were a load of options like enable Control Alt Backspace to kill X, and you could map... caps lock onto something else so that you didn't have caps lock, which I like not having.
Have they gone?
Yeah, they've gone. If you click on that now, it just takes you to other keyboard settings. Yeah, keyboard shortcuts.
Which I wonder is a shame. If that disappeared in GNOME or whether we threw that out.
What do you do with caps lock then?
I usually map it to another super key so I can use it to open the dash, or I just disable it. I mean, I used to, before I found that option, I used to just take it off my keyboard because I was fed up with pressing it by accident and having to turn it off.
How do you shout on the internet?
I hold shift.
Okay. He puts a big heavy weight on the shift key and then smashes buttons.
I don't allow myself to shout on the internet.
It makes him think by twice.
By not having a caps lock.
Dear listener, that sounds like a challenge. Get Mark to shout on the internet. What's next, Mark?
The Amazon search scope and presumably similar scopes will no longer be enabled by default on Unity 8. That's not the one you're talking about, is it?
No, that's fine.
No, but I did the wrong one.
Oh, that's fine.
This is what Mark will talk about.
Well done.
I'm no doubt in his interview next week.
Yes, I'm sure.
So
let's make sure we ask him about that.
Yeah, we shall.
Unity 8 is not going to be the one on the LTS release.
Yeah, so this is not really anything to do with 14.04. This is Unity 8, which is currently shipping on the phone and tablet, but will land in the desktop at some point in the future. But it's changed the way in which results are presented when you search, which is kind of resolving part of the long-term problem that a lot of people have had with the whole dash in the first place.
Excellent.
So yay,
good stuff.
Anything else in the news?
Canonical have announced that Ubuntu One will be closing down the file service Ubuntu One that people use to sync stuff between their computers.
Do they?
Run Ubuntu and on Windows and on Mac and on Android and on iPhone. As of today, it's no longer possible to purchase music from the Ubuntu One Music Store, thus rendering it rather silly. The file syncing service will be disabled on the 1st of June and all files deleted on the 31st of July. Canonical CEO Jane Silber explained that the decision was due to Ubuntu's focus being on converged operating system rather than cloud services, where they are already out-competed, if out-competed is, in fact, an acceptable word.
I don't know. You said it.
I just say what's written down in front of me.
I'll remember basically, that. The bits that are left that are still working is U1DB, the Ubuntu One single sign-on, and something else.
Something to do with money.
Oh, Ubuntu Pay.
Ubuntu Pay.
Right, so right. Paying for products.
Yeah, funny that bit's staying up and running. Although although you can't actually buy the products anymore from the music store to pay for them.
Right.
So I could just pay for things but I don't get.
Anything you've bought from the music store was all non-DRM and you could just download it anyway.
Yes.
So you could just go and download all the stuff that you bought from the music store.
Yeah, sure.
And keep a copy.
Yeah.
And everything that's in Ubuntu One File Sync, you need to get out of Ubuntu One before
31st of July.
Right.
Mm. Yeah, and the syncing will stop working from the 1st of June, but you'll still be able to get hold of your stuff.
So I think there's an opportunity for our listeners to suggest alternatives to Ubuntu One.
And cloud.
For our and other listeners. Sync. To try.
It's particularly useful for me because I actually use Ubuntu One for my business. So I have a synced folder on my computer that I process photographs on, and they sync up to Ubuntu One, and then I send my clients a link to the zip file using Ubuntu One.
I'm pretty impressed we've got 25 minutes into the show before Tony mentions his wedding photography business.
TonyWhitmoreWeddings.com.
Well, as you may know, Alan, it's not just weddings. It's all sorts of... I photographed Doctor
Maybe
Who.
Maybe we should talk about that Who next week.
Yeah. So we'll talk about that later. But the point is, it's a real business application that I've been relying on this service for. And I say to my clients that the files will be available for so long after that I've sent them the link. And now I'm going to have to do a lot of work to get out of that.
Right.
So I
would love to hear suggestions that cover all of the use cases, because it's not just the syncing files between places. There's also that the being able to share individual files or folders securely with another person, that kind of stuff.
But they are open sourcing it, aren't they?
Yes, they are open sourcing the server side. The code needs a clean up, and I think there's some work to do there. But they're going to open source them.
So if you'd like to take on the mantle of running Ubuntu One,
just for Tony,
for Tony under presumably under a different brand.
Yeah, you call it iFolder.
I think that's all we have in the community news.
That's all for this episode, the first episode of the seventh season of the Ubuntu podcast. We will be back next week with an interview with one Mr. What's his name? I can't remember.
Mark
Johnson.
Interview with me. About how great I am.
Mr. Shuttleworth himself.
Ah, Mark Shuttleworth, the Grand High Vizier.
Stop saying horrible things about my boss.
I've not said anything horrible. I wonder if he'll say anything horrible about you.
Could well do.
And we'll be back with all your feedback as well. So it's not just an interview with Mark Shuttleworth. We'll read out some random emails we received over the last 3 months.
If you are listening live, stay tuned, and the next episode is coming up shortly.
Don't give away the magic.
Anyway, thank you for listening. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.